Welcome to the DDT Archives Indie Lounge. I'm Chris, along with my co-host Greg. Greg, how you doing?
Doing fantastic, man. What's going on?
Not much. We are incredibly excited to have our guest today, Blanco Loco. How you doing today?
I don't do too bad, guys. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Doing great. Thank you for joining us, and
thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. We're gonna have some fun today and talk about your career and a couple other things. So, what's going on? What do you got for us, Chris?
So, I mean, let's start at the earliest. What are your earliest memories in pro wrestling?
Earliest memories. So, I'm originally from Syracuse, New York. You know, New Yorker, just like you guys. And whenever wrestling would come to the onset of War Memorial, my uncle used to do security for them. He did backstage work and stuff like that. So I get to go with him and, you know, get to see the wrestlers and meet the wrestlers and stuff like that, which was always cool. You know, it was either WCW or WWE. So that's probably my earliest memory is probably meeting, I don't want to date myself, but I'm going to have to.
It's okay, we're old.
But I got to meet Macho Man backstage one time with my uncle, and it was probably like the coolest thing because he got used for he was in the crowd, and he ended up during the match, he got pulled out like he was heckling, and he got pulled out through the crowd and got beat up, and then, you know, I got to meet Macho Man afterwards, so that was pretty cool.
That's rad.
That is definitely awesome. That's the best story we have heard in terms of memories and
well, on air.
So obviously that has to intrigue you growing up, seeing all these larger than life characters. What kind of led you into becoming a pro wrestler?
I'm sure you guys have heard of Carousel Mall in Syracuse.
Yep.
John Cena was actually doing a signing. So, you know, thank John Cena for Blanco Loco. there was people out there handing out flyers for a wrestling school. And, you know, I did wrestling in high school and stuff like that. And I'm only 16 at this time. So I'd done probably 2 years of high school wrestling and everything like that. I went undefeated my first year. Second year, I think I went like 6-6. But I had really wanted to get into it, and my family was always really supportive of it. And my mom at the time was kind of like, I don't know. I'm like, come on. She's like, well, how are you going to get there? You know what I'm saying? At this time, I've been started working at Burger King. I was 16 years old. I was the youngest shift manager ever at Burger King, plus going to school, you know what I'm saying? And practice started at 7 o'clock, so I was like, oh, I could do it. I literally sat here for probably 3 weeks just begging, just absolutely begging. She's like, if you pay for it and you're able to get there, because my mom is a nurse, so she wasn't, you know, she worked crazy hours, she couldn't, you know, just drop everything to take me. So the company I started training under was Squared Circle Wrestling. I'm sure you've heard of them, 2CW.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And my trainer was Zachary Springate, and he was trained by Killer Kowalski, same person Triple H was trained by. So I started training, and their first venue was out in North Syracuse, and it was in an old Air Force Army base, and it was probably a hour and a half walk. Now, when I say that an hour and a half walk, I mean it was an hour and a half walk. I mean, busy streets, you know, cross sections, cutting through neighborhoods, stuff like that.
I would walk it every Tuesday and Thursday. I have to ask you, because you're being upstate now, and I'm sorry to cut you off there. What time of year was this upstate Syracuse?
So when I started, it was May when I started.
Oh, okay.
But practice, let me tell you something. There was no excuse not to be at practice.
Yeah.
So, yes, I literally, me and my best friend at the time, he would walk with me through the snow, like in blizzards, to go to practice.
Oh, jeez.
And, of course, my trainer, he got upset with me a couple times because he's like, you know, what the fuck are you doing? And I'm just like, I'm coming to training. He goes, it's a fucking blizzard outside. How did you get here? I was like, I walked. He goes, if I find out that you walk in a blizzard again, he goes, you need to fight. So, like, I started hooking up with the other guys that were wrestling, you know, training and everything like that to make sure I could get rides and stuff like that. But there were other couple of times I walked and, you know, he didn't find out.
Oh, jeez. That's dedication at its finest, man.
Got to do what you got to do.
Absolutely.
So now your training continues under Afa and Matt Seidel as well, correct?
Correct. So I moved down to Florida. So I trained with 2CW. So here's the thing. I trained with 2CW on and off for probably about 2.5 years. And it was at no fault of the trainers or anything like that. Venues moved a couple of times, so it became a little bit harder to, I mean, as you can imagine, in upstate New York, it's very hard to keep a venue, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, so many businesses go in and out and places close down. So I was going there on and off for about almost three years. And I eventually got to the point where I'm like, do I really want to stay in Syracuse my entire life? And it just became one of those, you know, options of, okay, you either do it or you don't, you know? And at the time, Florida was the place to be for wrestling. So I moved down here. The first person I get in touch with is a company called ACW, American Combat Wrestling. They ran the famous Bourbon Street down here, which had people walk through like Vader, Ludwig Shawn, most of the FCW guys at the time and everything like that. So I started making a name for myself or attempting to and everything like that. And eventually I heard about WXW over here, which is, off of the Wild Samoan. So I went over there. You know, I got to talk with Pops and everything like that. And he gave me a shot, started going to training with him, started learning, you know, his way. And, you know, and it was just, it was completely different from anything that I'd ever learned, because it was drills that they actually use in WWE now, you know, to this day. And then WWN actually opened up their school, and Matt Seidel was, you know, the head trainer. So I started going there as well. So I'm bouncing back and forth, you know, training between two different places to kind of better myself as much as I can.
How did their styles differ in training? Obviously their wrestling style would be very different, but in terms of their training.
Matt is a no nonsense type of guy. He will teach you how to properly set up matches, how to incorporate what you're doing into your match, and how to, what's the word? I'm trying to look for the right word. I guess doing it in a sense where everything can make sense and you don't have to do a copious amount of crazy stuff. Pops is definitely more old school. But he's also the type that's going to get you ready for that conditioning. You know what I'm saying? Not to say that Matt didn't. Matt had his own conditioning, but Pops is more hands-on, like, I'm going to run you until you puke, but you're going to love me afterwards, I promise. And I certainly did.
What was it like the first time you stepped into the ring?
Nerve-wracking. Absolutely nerve-wracking. It took me probably a good month to do my a back bump properly. It took me another good 2.5 months to do, you know, flip bumps. It was crazy. Especially looking back at it now when I do them so easily, I'm just like, wow. It was just like real life setting in, you know what I'm saying? Kind of like, I'm here. This is where everybody starts. And, you know, and I'm not going to lie, my first few months, I just thought about completely just quitting. I'm just like, no, I'm not going to be able to do this. I'm too small. You know, when I first started out, I only weighed like 105 pounds. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was not in the greatest shape at all in my life, you know? And I got scrutinized for it consistently. Not in a way, you know what I'm saying? I mean, nowadays you hear people complain, oh, it's bullying and everything like that. You shouldn't, like, no, it wasn't. I never considered it bullying. I considered it telling me what I needed to hear, not what I wanted to hear. And I got my ass beat a few times. Not a sense of, like, you know, beaten up just for the sake of getting beat up, but, you know, but like toughening me up to get me ready for matches and get me ready to, you know, for what wrestling was going to be when I went out there by myself. So overall, nerve-wracking, definitely.
How about that first time in front of a crowd in your first match?
Oh, Lord. I had the worst case of butterflies you could ever imagine. And I'm sure everybody says that. because it's like that mixture of like you're excited, you're nervous, you don't know if you can do it, you're 100% positive you can do it, you're gonna go out here and kill it, these people are gonna love you, what if they hate you, what if you don't get a reaction, what if you mess a move up, what if you do this, what if you do that, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just all those feelings just culminating into one emotion, and it's just like, it's like a mind melt. It really is. It's like your entire brain is just like going on hyperspeed and you're not sure how to stop it. So yeah, that was just that was absolutely nuts.
is it just repetition, and just the more you do it, the more you get settled in? It's just like any other job. Like, you just, the first day you feel like you're going to throw up, and then it's just like every day it gets a little easier, gets a little easier, gets a little easier.
I'd have to disagree.
Okay.
Only because, like any other job, it's kind of like you're going out there and doing the same thing every single day.
Hmm.
And you know, you're learning, you know, like little. So like, I'll kind of put it like this. So I used to work for a rent-to-own company. When I first moved to Florida, it was my first job. I worked for a rent-to-own company, and I used to do accounts and everything like that. So it was take the payment, apply it to the account, or I would go pick up merchandise, or I'd try to talk to somebody for a payment. It was like pretty much a routine, you know what I'm saying? With wrestling, it's more you have to do your own merchandise, you have to do your own sales, you have to do your own product placement, you have to get to your venues, you have to make sure that you're there on time, you got to make sure that you have a hotel, you have to make sure that, you know what I'm saying, that your gear looks nice, you have to make sure your gear is washed, you make sure that your shoes are good or your boots are good, you have to make sure that, you know what I'm saying, you have bookings for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you know, what happens if Saturday cancels, what do you do then? Then you have to go back and find one. So like, it's always changing, you know what I'm saying? Well, crowds are always different as well.
Yeah. Well, you're your own company. That's basically what you're saying. It's like you're a one-man company with everything's on you. You're CEO, president, all that stuff. You know, it's fascinating, I can't imagine the amount of people that probably look at a wrestler and be like, oh, he just has to go in out there and perform. But you know, everything's on you.
Exactly. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? The best way it's ever been explained to me is you are a brand. You are no different than Nike. And I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Like, why do people go out and buy Nikes? Because they're the cool thing to have. Because, you know, they're always coming out with the next, you know, next cool design. They're comfortable. You know what I'm saying? You see everybody wearing them. Well, that's what I want to be. I want to be Nike. I want to be the guy that people want to book constantly to be in their show, to be in their, be in their main event. You know what I'm saying? Because I want to be the guy that everybody wants to see, that everybody wants to wear their merchandise, because that's the cool thing to do. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, not for sure, man.
You just made me miss Nike. I really do miss Nike. I coached at a school that was Adidas sponsored, so I have like 10 pairs of free Adidas sneakers in my garage. So my wife won't let me buy sneakers because I have all these brand new ones sitting around. I miss Nike.
Let me tell you something. The Adidas, though, Adidas had the most comfortable pair of shoes. And I still have a pair of Adidas, and they were the zigzags. The zigzags are the most comfortable pair of shoes you'll ever wear in your life. Like walking on a cloud.
Some of them are awesome.
When I got to tell you a little personal side note story. When Chris got married, his groomsman present to us, he bought us all Air Force Ones that were like all the same color, and we had to wear them at the wedding. It was like the best thing ever. I still have those. No, I can't beat that.
And the fun socks. Everybody got socks that matched their personality. I still haven't quite been able to explain to my cousin why he was a rainbow unicorn, but that's his.
There is nothing wrong with rainbow unicorns.
No.
Absolutely not. I thought they were the coolest pair of socks. They were. He apparently had some questions. So you're talking about branding, and obviously you're a mask superstar. Yep. And the mask has meant so much throughout wrestling history. What made you decide to don a mask?
So I get asked this question a lot. Am I a luchador? Am I a superhero? Am I just a guy in a mask? What am I like? And I get the confusion with Blanco Loco being, you know, kind of Spanish and everything like that. I don't consider myself a luchador. In the traditional sense, I consider myself more of a superhero type. And I mean, that just comes from pretty much, you know, I mean, as kids, we always had our favorite superheroes. Mine was always a mixture of Deadpool and Spider-Man. And that's what my character gets attributed to a lot is, you know, Deadpool or Spider-Man. More Deadpool than anything in regards to my promos and stuff like that. Blanco Loco, just the name was just kind of given to me. And when I decided to put a mask on, it's actually funny because I've gotten told by a lot of people, actually the one that sticks out the most was Adam Rose. We did a show with him up in Alabama. And I wasn't wearing the mask, and I go to put the mask on. And he goes, "Can I ask you something?" And I'm like, "Yeah, why not?" He goes, "I'm not funny." He's like, "Why do you wear the mask?" And I was like, "Oh, it's just a character," and it kind of just, you know, clasped and it went out. He goes, "You're not a bad looking guy." And I'm just like, "Okay, fair enough. So that's when I decided, okay, well, I'm gonna do another gimmick without the mask. So I actually do work two gimmicks. One's mainly for Florida, or, you know, if I do other, you know, stuff in like indie wrestling or something like that. But Blanco's the main character mask guy. So
nice. So we've actually had this discussion with a couple of people we've interviewed. The mask provides a unique challenge for you to express your emotions. I know a lot of us fans look at the facial expressions to kind of see the agony or see the excitement. How does it make it difficult or force you to find other ways to express those emotions?
So like you said, it is very difficult, very trying to try to get, you know, portray, you know, emotion, pain, happiness, excitement, everything like that with, you know, covering your face. One thing I will say is that I'm the biggest fan of The Rock, in regards to pretty much anything he's ever done. And I've tried to emulate how he sells, because if you ever watch how The Rock sells, it's over animated. You know what I'm saying? You could tell he's been hit. You could tell what he's selling. Go back to when he took a GTS from CM Punk on Raw, and the sell off that, even if his face wasn't, like, just cover his face. If you look at his body language right there, that just shows you that there's an immense amount of pain that he just, you know, that he just got impacted with. So it is very trying, but, you know, and also, I mean, to breathe. Some guys have the mouth, you know, the mouthpiece and everything like that. Mine's a full on over the face cover, you know what I'm saying? So I work on my cardio quite hard, as much as I can, in regards to that. But, I've learned tips and tricks over the years and stuff like that. I've had actually the pleasure to have Dr. Tom Pritchard give me some advice in regards to that. And he just, you know, like he says, just kind of be over animated, use your body language in that regards to, you know, to make sure that people are understanding what's happening, you know, because I can go in there and flop around like a dead fish for 20 minutes. But I mean, that could be anything. That could be me having a seizure. That could be me trying to do the worm. That, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can't really tell the difference between, you know, those two. But it's just about being overanimated and, you know, taking your time and letting things process, you know, with your body language versus, you know, your facials. And I'm 1,000% sure that I still make facials, even though I don't need to every single time. So.
But that's, you know, it's funny because, like, my regular job, I'm a restaurant manager, but, like, my background was in radio, and it's like, it's gotta be like a similar training where it's like, nobody can see you. So you have to talk like they're right in front of you, and and you have to, you know, if you're talking and you're not smiling, they're going to know you're upset, or like they can hear it in your voice. So it's gotta be a little bit, you know, like that theater of the mind sort of deal, you know?
So I've always thought about it like this. So, With radio and stuff like that, it's not what you say, it's how you say it.
Right.
And how that people perceive it. It's the same thing with wrestling. It's not what you do, it's how you do it.
Mm.
Is how I've always perceived it.
Oh, that's interesting, man.
So let's delve into a couple of your matches. So okay. You had a 4-way ladder match in Viral Pro between the Gymnasties, the Ugly Ducklings, the Lynch Mob, and of course your team, the International Superstars. Why is that one of your most memorable matches? And for fans who are unfamiliar with the match, you know, can you kind of paint a picture for them of what it was like?
it was just utter chaos. There was beauty in it as well. And that's the thing is like, so to really give to paint a picture, you got to give a little background on each of the teams. The Lynch Mob of Joey Lynch and Matt Lynch from Tennessee, they are just two of the just top guys. Down to earth, relatable, crazy good in the ring. And they take this as a job. You know what I'm saying? Same thing with Ugly Ducklings. You know, Rob Killjoy and Lance Lude, Mikey Gugliano, Coach Mikey. You know what I'm saying? Again, just crazy guys that are crazy athletic good. They have a different vibe to them, different look to them, and they take this as a job. Gymnasties, Timmy Lou and White Mike, again, another guys who have a different look but crazy athletic. They take this as a job. And then you have me and my former partner, we're gonna pretty much act like he's Voldemort and shall not say his name. We took this as a job, you know what I'm saying? And we had our own style and different look and everything like that. So you have four teams in here that all have a different look, all have a different style, all have different fan bases, but we all have one thing in common is that this is what we want to do. It's not just a weekend thing for us. It's not just, oh, we're going to work once or twice a month. No, it's literally all of us are on the road, busting our asses. All of us have, you know, put the time in. We're traveling constantly. We're getting looks. We're, you know, saying we know what we're doing. And it's just a match that the crowd have been clamoring for. And it hasn't happened anywhere else. You know what I'm saying? As you can imagine, any type of ladder match is just insane. This one had comedy. It had heat. It had, you know, the unbearable amount of crazy, just death-defying, you know, acrobatics. And at the same time, it told that very, very, you know, I don't want to say basic, but, you know, basic story of, you know, it's four teams out there vying for the same thing, which is the Viral Pro Championships. Everybody wants to be a champion, you know what I'm saying? And we fought tooth and nail. And the worst part, to me, the most nerve-wracking part, is that we opened the show. So we had to go out there and set the bar, and I definitely think we did. And it was probably, like I said, one of my favorite matches. I mean, to go out there and be able to just, you know, be in the same league as some of those teams who, you know, maybe a year before we didn't think we were even in their league. You know, I mean, the Gymnasties have always been on a different level. Same thing with Ugly Ducklings, and so same thing as Lynch Mob. You know, they've been killing it, and we're still, you know, relatively not new, but still, you know, working our way up to being, you know, one of the main tag teams. And we're in the ring with four of the greatest ones that are, you know, been traveling and busting their asses week in and week out. You know, and it was a surreal moment. So it was just. It was just perfection, I guess. You know what I'm saying? Like, even if it wasn't perfect to the eye, it was perfection in regards to it gave everybody what they wanted, you know?
How do you prepare for matches like that? You know, with obviously where you know you're taking death-defying risks.
So here's my I'm sure a few of my colleagues will say the same thing. As soon as I hear about a match that I'm about to have, I just start thinking about the craziest, stupidest stuff I can do. And then I start to dial it back, and then I go right back into the stupid things and everything like that. I mean, it's best not to think about it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was definitely hella sore the day after. It was just, like I said, crazy. I don't know, like, I don't think we planned too much. We just started thinking of stuff, and you know, if this happens, we'll do it. And you know, maybe we could do this. Maybe. But you know, it's kind of hard when you got four other tag teams thinking of different stuff they could do as well. But overall, it was a little nerve wracking. It really was, especially being on, like I said, being told you're on first, then being told, you know, what I'm saying, you got, you know, you're in a Fatal 4-Way TLC match, and then, you know, be told, oh, by the way, we sold out. I'm like, oh, okay, that's even better, even better. Oh, by the way, we're gonna go ahead and we're gonna push this as one of the top matches that we're gonna present at this show. Okay. More mental, I guess, readiness is what I was looking forward to more being, you know, switching on to Blanco and out of my, you know, real life deal is what I was trying to do, and just trying to keep myself calm more than anything, versus trying to prepare for the match itself, just kind of keep myself calm and going through it and, you know, hoping that everything went, you know, correctly, you know.
Yep. Now that's got to, I mean, the people I feel worse for are the people that have to follow that.
So normally, you know, say normally I would say yes, but in this aspect, this card was so stupid packed, and it was just viral pro wrestling. They don't play when it comes to talent. So no matter if we went first or if we went main or anything like that, like every match on that card delivered, and there was just there was no bad match. Like it didn't matter where you put any of the matches. Like it was just they just know how to set it up. So I hate using the word perfect, but it was a perfect card. It was just, you know, they set it up the way, you know, and the matches to where it was just, there wasn't a bad match. Like, you know, and that's hard to, you know, that's not to say that, you know, no other companies do that, but you know what I'm saying? Like you watch PWG, and I'll go ahead and say it was kind of PWG style, where PWG sets up this crazy tag match to start the show off with. And then it's like, there's no way anybody's going to top that. And even if you don't really, you know, even if your first match was your favorite match, you still watch every other match and you're like, damn, that was fucking good. You know what I'm saying? Like, you could go out there and watch the Young Bucks and Kevin Owens, you know, taking on freaking the Lucha Bros with Trent Barreto or whatever. And yeah, it's gonna, you know, it's going to be a banger. You know what I'm saying? But then here comes freaking Mike Elgin versus, God, I'm just trying to grab names right now. versus, you know, Mike Elgin versus anybody, really. Let's be honest. It's going to be a good match. You know what I'm saying? That's kind of how it was set up. You know, it's just to be an overall just amazing card. And it ended up, like I said, I mean, even if people felt like we were, you know, the best match, I'm sure there were other, you know, I watched every other match after that because I didn't really have much to do afterwards. And it was just, it was an incredibly just well put together show altogether, you know. I really never try to worry about people after me, especially being on the cards that I'm on. You know, I've had, you know, the opportunity to be able to work with shows like AML, the ones they run WrestleCade and stuff like that. My first WrestleCade was last year. They just bring in the best talent, you know what I'm saying? If anything, I was more worried about having to go out there and put on this type of match with all the talent that's coming after me, you know what I'm saying? And not, hopefully the fans don't forget what we just did, you know? It was more, a little bit more nerve-wracking than that type of atmosphere.
So let's dive into that WrestleCade experience. You worked Ethan Page, who obviously is a, you know, right now one of the top in one of the top tag teams in the world. Mm-hmm. How was that?
Absolutely fantastic. Anybody says that man doesn't hit hard is a liar. No, he's absolutely a great guy, honestly. It was a great match overall. I mean, I was ready. It was funny because WrestleCade weekend was running Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And it was like probably 2 weeks before WrestleCade, I got an email from SmackDown. Hey, we'd like to have you, you know, come in, yada, yada. I'm like, oh, crap. I'm like, ugh. So I messaged Brian. I was like, hey, Brian, I got this opportunity. He's like, take the opportunity. 100%. Go ahead. Make sure you're here Saturday. Okay, no problem. Go and do SmackDown on Friday in Alabama. Drive all the way from Alabama to North Carolina. Get there. I think we got there like 5 a.m. Saturday morning. And the call time was like 11 o'clock. So I'm like, okay, check it in. Yeah, yeah. That's the life of a wrestler traveling. Just like I said, it's my first ever WrestleCade, you know what I'm saying? And I mean, it was surreal just seeing like the place was packed, just absolutely packed with, you know, not even just the legends, but the fans, you know what I'm saying? And I mean, I don't think I saw one unhappy person, you know what I'm saying? And they sold the most tickets they ever had, and each event was just crazy. The Saturday night show, I was in the Battle Royal, ended up being one of the final four in the Battle Royal, with Fala Ba. Oh, God, I forgot now. I have such a horrible memory. I could tell you exactly what I did on Saturday for each one of my matches I worked, but I can't tell you that. I was in there with the question mark from MWA. Just a lot of great guys, you know what I'm saying? And I mean, it was just like, it was a surreal moment because you have this place that's just packed out with thousands of people and there's chanting and screaming. I'm just like, oh my God, like this is awesome. You know what I'm saying? So it was definitely, you know, I'm thankful and grateful, you know, especially to AML, to Brian and Tracy, you know, for having me on there. Cause you know, I was relatively new to the company. They didn't have to have me on, but they did. And getting to work Ethan Page. And again, I mean, guess what match we were? Number one.
Yeah. So WrestleCade is basically a convention. It's like the North Carolina. So what was your, besides just the crowds, just hanging out down there, what was like the fan interactions like?
Oh, the fans were fantastic. I mean, to be honest with you, like, I love North Carolina fans. I really do. I absolutely do. They're probably one of the best fan bases other than the UK. But they were like, they're just super polite. They have little conversations, but they don't try to like, I'm trying to think of the word. They don't try to pry into your personal life. They understand that you are who you are at that point, and they don't try to, you know, step beyond that. And they're just super thankful that you're even there. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they're just great. I mean, that's
them. Told you, North Carolina. Like, I'm a New Yorker. North Carolina has a special place in my heart. I lived there for 2 years. My son was born there. I loved it down there. So I can definitely relate to the kind of people that are down there. It's one of my favorite places to be. Absolutely.
And that's where you can tell Greg and I are different, because I go down there and the people are way too friendly for me. I can't deal with the conversation.
I also lived outside of Raleigh and everyone there is from here. So, yeah. So it's like,
that's how Tampa is. Everybody's from, I've met at least like 100 people from Syracuse. I'm like, wow, you got out too, huh?
Tell us about that opportunity you had with the WWE on SmackDown.
It wasn't the first time, you know what I'm saying? Like, I've been blessed enough to be able to work for WWE quite a few times in the past 2 years between NXT, Raw, SmackDown. Didn't anything. Didn't do anything at all. Just showed up, you know. They didn't have any spots available. So that's what it was. That's always the thing. Like, you're there to show your face. You're there to be available if they need you. You know what I'm saying? And it never looks bad to be there. You know what I'm saying? I've had quite a few opportunities where I was the Miz Curity during the Daniel Bryan Miz feud. So that was fun. I've got to wrestle against the War Raiders. That was probably, I think, 2 years ago now. I've got the opportunity, and that was in NXT. Got Damian Priest as well in NXT. No Raw or SmackDown matches yet. But the traveling's been really fun, honestly. Like, I don't have, like, and this is not me just saying that I had nothing bad to say, you know, just because, you know, but I really can't say anything negative about my experiences. You know what I'm saying? They've all been 110% positive, between the staff, the workers, the catering. It's always just been positive.
But it's got to be nice that, like, you know, every now and again you get a call and they think of you, you know. It's that's a badge of honor for somebody who's working hard, who's having good matches all over the place, that, you know, you're on their list somewhere, man. You know, it's,
oh yeah, I got the call a couple of weeks ago. I did a Raw at the Performance Center, and it was, you know, just getting to see the Performance Center and everything like that. It was an absolute pleasure, and you know, I'm thankful that they called me, honestly.
That's great.
So you mentioned enjoying the time on the road. It's one of those questions that I like to ask everybody. You know, what are some of the best lessons you've learned in those car rides from town to town?
Best lessons. Always fill up a half a tank. No. Save money. If you know somebody that works for a hotel, get them to put you on their friends and family list. I actually have a friend that put me on his So I get discounts at the Marriott. So we're not, you know, we're not shelling out $100 for a hotel room. It's, we're only selling, you know, like $30.
Let's like, I'll be a shill for Marriott till the day I die. I worked there for 5 years. I love that guy. And I still have, it's good to know friends in low places when you need a room and you call them, you call your exactly. friends still work there.
I always try to get, in regards to like shows and stuff like that, I always try to get in at least 6 hours into the state before the show, if not the night before, it all depends. Disney Plus is amazing to have.
Yeah, that is for sure.
There's really not a lot of tips and tricks. You know, I definitely, let me wrong, I like flying, you know what I'm saying? Like, we've had the pleasure to fly, you know, fly around to LA, Chicago, Texas, Louisiana, New York, even North Carolina, you know, but, you know, driving, I don't know, driving just gives you kind of that freedom to, you know, I don't know, kind of enjoy it more, I guess. You know what I'm saying? I mean, flying, you get there faster, sure, but I have no problem driving either. I like it either way.
Yeah.
Definitely. So we're going to start winding down. You know, where do you see you being 5 years from now? What are your goals, you know, short and long term, and what are you going to do to make sure that they happen?
Short term, I want to get some bigger companies. Obviously, hopefully this craziness ends soon. But I just want to work for bigger companies. You know what I'm saying? I've transitioned back to a singles worker. I do tag every now and then with my tag team partner, Ellie, Dream Girl Ellie. But just kind of just have the best matches I can, honestly, and get myself into the best physical shape I can. Long term, obviously, you know, it's everybody wants to be signed. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and I'm not really, you know, I'm not saying I'm not picky. It's just more of, you know what I'm saying, like with all the valuable options that people have nowadays, you know what I'm saying, there's really not a bad place to work, you know. Not from what I've heard, at least, you know what I'm saying, from some of my friends who signed with WWE or AEW or Impact, you know what I'm saying. I mean, even MLW, one of my former tag team partners, Zach Cooper, just signed with MLW. And he's actually a college football coach now, too, down in, I think it's, I want to say near Port St. Lucie. But, yeah, I mean, it's just, there's just nothing bad about signing nowadays, you know what I'm saying? Even if I don't get signed, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's very valuable. You know, like, wrestling's all I do right now, you know what I'm saying, in regards to, you know, money income. And I was very smart with my money. So, you know, I'm doing okay right now. I haven't had to file for unemployment or anything like that, you know. So it's very easy these days to be able to live off of independent wrestling, if you're smart about it. But I don't know. I just want to keep doing my thing. You know what I'm saying? Just keep on getting better and keep on learning and having, you know, matchups and, you know, working with the best that I can. Honestly, I definitely, you know, short and long term goal is to go work in Japan. That is definitely one of my biggest goals. I had the opportunity to work in the UK last year, and that was just such a amazing experience. The crowd over there is just absolutely, oh, they're fantastic. Would I live there? No. Just, the houses are too small. But yeah, that's really it. I mean, I've had the opportunity to create actually my own kaiju character. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Kaiju Big Battle. It's definitely a different Kaiju Big Battle.
Yeah, what's that about?
So it's giant monsters. It's just like you would think, like Godzilla and everything like that.
Yeah.
It's if you get a chance to check it out, you can find it on YouTube. But I've gotten the chance to work with them over the years. Actually, my first WrestleMania that I did with WWN was in Dallas, Texas, and I worked Kaiju, and it was my first ever Kaiju, and I was the Silver Potato, taking on Dr. Cube, and Dr. Cube was Drew Gulak.
Oh wow.
So I'm thinking, and here's a little quick story. I'm thinking that, oh, Kaiju, you just call regular matches and everything like that. So I start calling all these crazy spots. And Gulak just like stares at me like really intensely. He's like, have you ever fucking done this before? And I'm like, no, sir. He goes, oh, okay. So this is what it is. This is what it is. This is what we're going to do. So he explains it to me. He's like, it's much more gimmicky wrestling in that regard. another nerve-wracking fact of this match, of getting my first ever kaiju, is that Kota Ibushi was in the match as well.
Jeez.
So, and these shows, let me tell you something about kaiju. Kaiju, anywhere it goes, kaiju sells out. Because it is not only an incredible experience, but it's fun. You know what I'm saying? As wrestling should be.
Of course.
But yeah, if you guys ever get a chance to do that, look that up. It's just, it's absolutely probably some of the best wrestling I've ever done. I've ever had.
That's awesome.
That's great. You know, we can't thank you enough for coming on with us. You know, we told you from the start, we really enjoyed your work. We think you're super talented and definitely will continue to follow along. If you want, plug any of your social media, anything you want fans to take a look at.
Oh yeah, you can check me out on Instagram at The Blanco Loco, on Twitter, Real Blanco Loco. Facebook is obviously Blanco Loco and or the International Superstars. Me and my tag team partner, Dream Girl Ellie. And I mean, we have a pro wrestling tea store as well, where we have brand new designs up. I actually just uploaded the new Jurassic Chew, which is the Pikachu Jurassic Park t-shirt, which is actually pretty cool. I have a Rocko Mountain Life t-shirt on there. I've got a bunch of cool stuff. That's really it for social media stuff.
Well, can't thank you enough for being our first official fellow New Yorker on our show. Like, this is huge for us.
No, I definitely appreciate you guys having me.
All right. You can follow us on Twitter at DDT Archives. You can follow Chris on Twitter at
Chris_DDTHSLB.
Fantastic. We got through that. And once again, thank you to our guest, Blanco Loco. You're fantastic, man. Appreciate the time and best of luck going forward. Can't wait to watch you work again.
Appreciate you.
Thank you.